Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Browner and Lawhead. I'm John Browner, as always, joined by world-renowned, famous comedian, new headset owner, cat enthusiast himself, Jason Lawhead. This is Browner and Lawhead on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. We are coming to you live from Southern California. What up, Jason?
The mega market. What up, bro? Yeah, you forgot in that intro, you forgot not expecting father.
Yeah. My bad. Also, but not expecting any children.
Right, Jason exactly. Lawhead. Not feeding for three, that's for sure.
If you guys missed the show yesterday, Jason had made an error world of social media. You know, where you put a word now can literally end your career. So this guy, in his case, almost got thrown out of his house. So you got to be careful where you put those words now on the internet. One word could change everything. Right. That was Jason's life. He had put dining for three or something about eating for three. Exquisite meal for three with two people at the table. You know what? Let me just... If you're listening, it's Jason at the table with his wife during their anniversary, and him putting an exquisite meal for three.
I'm old, Browner. Social media never even was invented. Like the first day of MySpace, I was like 35 probably when that came out. So, you know, I mean, I was thinking in that sense of for three, you know, like years. But so I'm gonna be 50. I'm way older than social media, so you got to cut me some slack. But you're right. One word will just get – I had literally over a dozen messages. People I've never even heard from that just follow me like, dude, are you going to be – like, no. Well, who are you?
Like, how'd you get my number?
Exactly. Even the Bitcoin people were like, hey, man, I see you're going to have another kid. You might want to invest in Bitcoin. I'm like, get out of here.
Wait, you read my social media?
Exactly. You know, but yeah, so not doing that. That's for sure.
Yeah. So on the show today, we're going to talk about that game last night, whatever you made of it. The Padres are starting a big time series with the Dodgers downtown at Petco. A lot of you guys on your way to that. We'll get to that in a little bit. The NBA media day has happened, and I want to ask Jason a question about who has shocked him so far during the season. Now, NFL season. Before we get to any of that, I want to tell you, I don't hate the Monday night broadcast. I don't watch games for broadcasters. And so when a person tells me Troy Aikman and Joe Buck are making $20 million a year, none of that phases me. I'm not sitting in front of a television to watch Cowboys Giants be 3-3 at halftime or 6-3 at halftime. I don't care who the announcer is. So what you're going to have to do for me is entertain me. And Joe Buck and Troy Aikman don't do it. I don't want a traditional call when the game is 6-3. I was one of those people who I liked Dennis Miller in the booth. I liked Tony Kornheiser in the booth because I want something different when a game gets like that. If you don't give me Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, if you don't give me Justin Herbert and Tom Brady, I don't care who the announcer is. It's irrelevant to me. If the product on the field doesn't exceed the announcer, I don't care. And last night, ESPN has the Manning cast. And that saved my viewership of that game. Because if I didn't get to see Peyton Manning lose his mind last night because the Giants, for whatever reason, wouldn't call a timeout, which blows his dome every time someone doesn't call a timeout, I wouldn't have watched. I literally wouldn't have watched. And here's a perfect case example. On Sunday Night Football, when the Broncos were playing the 49ers, and that game was atrocious, I turned it off. Mm-hmm. I turned it off. Jason, how long do you sit and watch a bad game that does not involve the Browns? Because I can sit and watch a Bears game all day.
Well, that's been a lifetime for me watching bad games that involve the Browns. When there's another bad game like Sunday night and Monday night, most of it at least till a little couple possessions there towards the end where at least, you know, I just kind of was sitting there because it's Monday night. What am I going to watch? America doesn't have talent. What am I going to watch? So But yeah, no, I mean, there, oftentimes in a game like last night, I'll tell you one thing. I stuck through last night because I stuck through Sunday night, and because it's week three, and because it's so early, and I'm still excited about football all the time. And even though this week was probably a down week overall, Miami-Buffalo was a good game. But as far as matchups, finishes, games, final scores, offensive production, you know, marquee matchups that were duds as far as, you know, some of these quarterback. All of that being said, first 2 weeks were really good pound for pound when you take in consideration that most guys don't, almost nobody plays preseason. A lot of guys don't even full practice until game one, right? And so last 2 years, man, pound for pound, every single week was awesome. And maybe we've gotten a little spoiled, and maybe the two real big early season primetime games that we all want to sit around, you know, get ready for Sunday night, you know, in the cold of November when you got some, you know, Christmas shopping to do and some other things to do, easier to tune out of that one. But I watched it through because, you know, there's always great chances of wild finishes in the NFL. And even in that 11-10 game, at least it delivered a dramatic last drive from pin back, you know, 80 some 90 yards away that Russ had to, you know, go bring up. So I don't know. Listen, last night's game only didn't really entertain me, but it told me a few things. And that's what we do for a living, is to try to talk about the things that sports has told us so we can kind of say it out of our lens. And that's really the reason I watched.
Because if you're a Cowboys fan, I got to tell you, man, Cooper Rush can play football.
There you go.
You may not, you know, he not might be flashy. He may not. Cooper Rush is Kirk Cousins. Now, I know people make that sound crazy. Look at what he's done. He's 3-0 as a starter. He's 2-0 this season. And he plays competent football. He doesn't make bad passes. He throws the ball away when he needs to. He hits a check down when he needs to. That's Kirk Cousins 101. And if Jerry Jones said this earlier in the week about how he would crawl from Dallas to New York if that means he could get a quarterback controversy. If Cooper Rush wins another game, you might have one if Dak comes back and he can't get the job done. Because Dak hasn't looked good. He didn't look good in game one, mostly because he didn't play in the preseason, which, again, something that I don't understand why more teams are doing this. But more guys aren't playing in the preseason. But as a quarterback, timing, routes, with new receivers. CeeDee Lamb last night, fantastic. And Cooper Rush made plays. So of everything I saw last night, the one thing I took away from that terrible game was that I really like Cooper Rush way more than I thought I would going in. And I think Brian Daboll is the right guy to fix the Giants, because he's got Daniel Jones looking confident, and a running theme of what I've seen with some of these young coaches, they're putting their quarterback in a position to do what he does best, not what their offense, what the coach thinks their offense can do best. And so in that dumpster fire last night, a couple of good things came out of it.
Well, yeah, I'll agree with you on Rush. What I like about Rush is what it probably does more for McCarthy as a coach, because McCarthy came in still thinking he was coaching Aaron Rodgers. And I'm sorry, but Dak Prescott has never put himself out there. And so you got McCarthy still thinking he's coaching Aaron Rodgers because he's getting a high contract, like, you know, touted player like Prescott. It never really worked. And now this brings McCarthy back down to earth a little bit. Now McCarthy has to coach the quarterback that he's got, not the quarterback that he thinks he's got, and the quarterback he thought he was coaching when he came over here. So maybe that's good for everybody. I kind of liken that, and it's just not a McCarthy thing. I liken that to the Stefanski situation. Stefanski now is coaching a quarterback he knows he has to coach this way, because, you know, he has to live a little bit more in a reality based life than this Mayfield is the number one overall pick, Heisman Trophy. He beat Pittsburgh. He's going to lead us to the promised land. He's the next answer. So we're going to go, you know, balls to the wall here with this kind of an offense and make all the mistakes we can. And that's kind of what McCarthy, and I likened this last year, the Prescott, McCarthy, Baker, Mayfield, Stefanski, where they were doing the same things to each other. And that basically that's what made these teams underachieve. So this is good. And Daniel Jones, you know, look, they need an offensive line. I don't know if that offense letting him on his legs, you know, that works for a while, but you see all down the stretch when teams buckle up, they, I hate the saying, but the, you know, the broadcasters that we pay $20 million to love it, when they pin their ears back and it really gets into the trenches and the game gets built into the trenches. I don't know if that's the kind of offense or quarterback that is going to, you know, complement the Barkley type of game and try to get guys, you know, when you have to feed in the red zone, that offense kind of starts getting exploited a little bit. And Jones is a good athlete. He's running for his life. I just don't know. And I think Daboll's a good coach, but I don't know if that's going to be what the Giants – I see a bigger future if Cooper Rush, you know, plays this way for Dallas going forward with that defense and the way that they can keep him protected than the Giants, even if Barkley has a big year. Than the Giants right now with the way that offense sputters around at the important times in the game.
You know, I've never been a fan of the Cowboys, but one of the things that I have noticed that there people want to talk about their pass rush. I honestly felt like last night it was their secondary that played a better game. Some of these. Daniel Jones made some throws last night that I was like, woo, okay, I see you. But then he also made some throws where the defense made plays. And not the one at the end when the guy fell down, that one didn't count. The secondary of the Dallas Cowboys made some plays last night where I was like, okay, all right. Maybe that's because of that pass rush. They can sit on certain routes because they know the receiver doesn't have a lot of time. Or these guys have to have what it takes to make those high leverage plays and to get interceptions and create turnovers and good pass deflection. So last night was interesting. It stunk until halftime. And if it was up to me, I would send an email to never put Tracy Morgan on television in an interview ever again in the history of television, as long as televisions exist. But I don't have a control of that. If you're in your car right now and you're headed down to Petco, you're going down for this. Game 154. It is Blake Snell against Tyler Anderson. Blake Snell coming off a, let me say it one time, 13 strikeout game. 13. 1-3 in his last performance. This, whether you think this is a big series or not for the Padres, I don't. I think that they can find their way to the postseason regardless of how this series goes. I mean, I hope it goes positive, but I don't see this as one of those defining moments, but I do expect the Padres to win 2 out of 3 of these.
Well, here's what I would like to see from the Padres. I would like to see the Padres work on, you know, in this series. And like you said, even if they get swept, there's still a good chance they go, you know, to the playoffs with the way the percentages are lying right now. They'd have to really tank it on the way out. And you know, the Dodgers are, you know, okay. And even if they get 2 out of 3 taken from, I'd like to see them try to really find ways to get some runs the old-fashioned way when there's chances to do that and manufacture them. Now, look, when there's green light situations and your Sotos and your Machados are at the plate, obviously you're going to let them try to bust the game open or swing away. But I'd really like to see this team in this series, you know, try to attack fundamentally in small ball situations. And, you know, Snell has gone – you know, stronger later than he has since he's been a Padre, in my opinion, as of recent. You know, he is looking better in those later innings before he gets to his pitch count and usually comes out than he ever has. So he's had a stretch of that. That's important for the Padres. You know, if Blake Snell is handing the ball over to Melvin in the postseason, even if it's in the sixth inning, and he was already, you know, basically coming through his strongest stuff at that time, they're in good shape. And Snell's start tonight is going to be an indication of, can I go up against a postseason offense and go give the ball to Melvin at six innings and go, here, I gave you a really good chance to win this game against anybody, let alone the Dodgers. I think that's going to be the big thing that comes out of this series. Small ball, a little bit. Let's see if, even if you're going to lose the game, did you score 3 or 4 runs? Did you do things right in those situations to get a couple of runs that maybe you would have let go by the wayside? And That's what I'm looking for.
I'm also looking for something tonight that a lot of people aren't really talking about, but they should. Here are the odds to win a National League MVP award. Paul Goldschmidt, minus 300 for the Cardinals. Nolan Arenado, Cardinals, plus 350. Plus 3,500. Freddie Freeman from the Dodgers, plus 3,500. Manny Machado, plus 7,000. Mookie Betts, 8,500. Trey Turner. What I'm trying to explain to people, the first two guys on this list, Cardinals. The next three out of five guys on this list are Dodgers, with the exception of Manny Machado. I'm bringing this particular conversation to the forefront because everybody on that list has had a massive amount of help. Someone else in the organization on a day-to-day basis is doing the heavy lifting. Manny Machado, from day one, when it was declared that Tatis would be out for an extended period of time due to a motorcycle accident, which led to it in subsequent surgery, Manny Machado carried the weight. When it got time for us to make a massive trade, Manny Machado, hurt at the time, still carried the weight because the guys who came over didn't necessarily do what we thought they would do initially. Then after that trade deadline, the ceiling falls on them when they realize they will not be getting Fernando Tatis for 80 games, not because of some surgical procedure, but because he's a dopehead, apparently, when it comes to ringworms. And yet somehow that energy was rolled through in a positive manner by Manny Machado. If you want to look at statistically his numbers compared to the other five guys and the six guys in the category, go ahead. But please look at the rest of the team and show me someone else that is giving you what Goldschmidt is giving to Arenado or vice versa, what Freddie Freeman is giving to Mookie Betts and Trey Turner or vice versa. No one's doing that for the Padres. Manny Machado is carrying this team. And to me, that's why he is the MVP. Because you can remove one of those guys off those other teams and they would still, quite frankly, be in the same position. This isn't Aaron Judge. This isn't a guy who physically is beating his way into the record books with a possible triple crown and carrying his team into the playoffs in first place. I wouldn't argue Manny Machado against that. But what we're seeing in St. Louis, who the Padres, by the way, just beat in three games, and what we're seeing from the Dodgers, who have a mountain of help around him, I just think Manny Machado should be the MVP.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely an argument. And we talked about this, somewhat a few weeks ago, I think, when that we kind of dipped our toe in this conversation. And at that time, you know, I was sitting there going, look, you can take a lot of people away from the Dodgers and they're still going to win this division by 15, 16, 17 games.
Right.
You could probably remove one of those two players from the Cardinals and they'd struggle to win that division and fight for a wild card for sure. The Mets, the Mets have a nice pot of just guys that have just all stepped up. I don't see a single Met being the reason that a player should be the National League MVP. I think the argument comes down to, you know, where's St. Louis and how they jumped out, stayed on that lead, kept the pedal down, and really was a team that played consistent baseball all year. And if you knock a Goldschmidt down to a 240, and no production, where are they? Or Aaron Donna, where are they? I think maybe, yes, they're still sniffing it. If you take Machado and knock him down to 250, right, the Padres are in bad shape, right, this year, especially even after the trade with the production that those guys brought. So it's a, you know, I get the reasoning why those are the MVP candidates, no matter how great of a person's year somebody else may have had, Freeman, anybody else, but the baseball loves St. Louis. You know, it's a baseball town. They love St. Louis. They love the baseball town. And I think a lot of just, you know, another division title, the way they went out and got into first place and stayed in the driver's seat. And Goldschmidt was just he was just hitting like a guy that really never slumped all year. Not that Machado did. I just think that's probably the difference in this MVP race, even though Machado probably won't even finish second. That's the bad part of the other voters. He should be a shoo-in for second if he doesn't win it.
I'm going to read these stats to you, and you tell me what you think. So of batting average, Goldschmidt 320. Okay. Average for Arenado and Machado are both Machado 296, Arenado 293. Home runs, Machado 30, Goldschmidt 35. RBI is 112 for Goldschmidt, Manny 95. War, which, you know, whatever.
Right.
Machado 7.7. Nolan Arenado 7.0. Goldschmidt 7.1. So, it really
that's
depends.
All the same.
Yeah. Right. It really depends on having help has helped them. Manny carrying the team has put him in a situation where no one can say that he hasn't been the backbone of his team and his organization. And I have always, all along, thought that's what the damn MVP award was about. But we'll find out more. There's so much more. You guys are headed down to the ball game. We got more to talk about on the other side of this. We talk about Media Day and a couple other things. Browner and Lawhead when we come back on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. Browner and Lawhead here on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. If you guys are just joining us, we are here from Monday through Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., giving you a little bit of entertainment. We have a saying on this show: by the time you've reached us, you've formed your opinion. And so our conversations are just to have fun and kind of beat around some things that are less talked about. We talked about Manny Machado's possibility for being the MVP. We talked about the Padres-Dodgers series, if you guys are driving down there tonight. And we talked about last night's Monday Night Football game and whether the announcers do it for you. Jason, it's NBA Media Day. Have you had a chance to check anybody out?
You know, I don't really, other than, you know, I'm kind of following the, you know, the Lonzo Ball injury a little bit. And, you know, I mean, the Lakers, all that preseason, you know, static, it's all just so predictable. Why listen or follow any of this Laker preseason stuff until they actually put a product on the floor and start giving me a reason to talk about that? This is all just so predictable. It's just all the same pictures and the same poses and the same quotes and a couple of different guys and a new coach. And, you know, so the theme doesn't interest me much. You know, and so I'm ready to just, I'm ready to see these teams get out on the court. Obviously, you know, there'll be a kind of a cloud hanging over the Suns a little bit with the Sarver situation. We'll see how the team and coach and all those guys just kind of react and try to separate themselves from that.
Right.
And I'm excited about my Cavaliers, obviously, with the Donovan Mitchell trade and some other, you know, people they're able to keep, you know, in the young team and to be so young, but to see the Guardians baseball team going into the playoff as the youngest team in the major league. A lot of that's, you know, so other than that, you know, obviously the Uma Doka story is huge. And, but I'm wishing Lonzo Ball the best. I never had any problem with the ball, the kids, the players. I always wish he was able to kind of thrive outside of the father's shadow that, you know, kind of I felt in the beginning. I think, you know, LeVar's learned some things after watching himself probably on TV.
And he's been quiet for a while.
Yeah, man. No, and he's letting LaMelo and even Lonzo, you know, thrive in Chicago, but now this injury. So I feel bad for him, and I'm just hoping he's able to make it back out on the court. But things don't look good from these last reports of him not even being able to run or even walk up the stairs after the surgery.
The Lonzo Ball injury is very interesting to me, and it has some local connections because obviously he played at UCLA and he played for the Lakers. I got to tell you, I don't agree with the way the Bulls management handled this. They gave Lonzo Ball an entire offseason and every opportunity for them and his people to address this knee. Now it's time for the season to start, and he's having a surgery tomorrow.
Yeah.
So if you can't walk up a flight of stairs, and if you have pain in the knee to now that you can't jog, jump, or run, what the hell have you been doing all offseason with taking care of the knee? So because I think that's really going to hurt the Chicago Bulls. When I look at the Lakers in their media day, when I look at the Nets in their media day, because there's only really two teams when it comes to media day that are even relevant at this point because there's been so much offseason noise. The Lakers and the Nets. What I heard from the Lakers was very Hollywood and to be expected. Everybody's getting along. Anthony Davis said he's going to play 82 games. LeBron James said that everything's under control. Just lies. when we knew the entire offseason LeBron was trying to get Russell Westbrook on another team. When we watched Darvin Ham come in and say, well, we're going to figure out what we need to do about Russell Westbrook, and then saying that he's not 100% so that he won't come off the bench. So, again, we know Anthony Davis is not going to play 82 games because we're not stupid. Like, we've seen him play before. Like, he literally gets hurt playing himself.
Has he even played 82 games in a Lakers jersey?
Never. So
I mean, I'm saying all together in all of the years he's been a Laker.
That's a great question. Someone wrote out the quote like, oh, Anthony Davis has played more games than Kawhi Leonard in the last 2 years. I'm like, and so? Kawhi Leonard tore an ACL. Okay. Anthony Davis hurts breathing. So the Lakers media day was an interesting look. I thought Brooklyn's media day was far more telling because Kevin Durant wants you to like him. Kevin Durant, if you ask him a question, he will be honest with you. And sometimes that's to his detriment. Sometimes that's to his help because it allows people to kind of see where he's coming from because he speaks so open-heartedly. Kyrie Irving, on the other hand, I've never met Kyrie Irving. I don't know Kyrie Irving. But I never saw somebody who I know is dumb, who thinks he's smarter than everybody else. It's utterly astounding how his arrogance comes through the television. Mm. This man said, yeah, I lost over $100 million because I wouldn't get vaccinated. I'm like, bro, that's not why you lost that money. You lost that money because you wouldn't show up. You lost that money because when it came time for you to play the year before last year, you took a week off the season because of the Capitol January 6th riots. Like, there's a lot of reasons why you lost that money, dude. The Nets didn't want to pay you. And shocker to his admission, there were not a lot of teams looking for him. There were not a lot of offers out there for Kyrie Irving. I think that's really what have turned the light bulb on for him to say, uh-oh, I might want to get it together for the next 82 games. You talk about somebody who hadn't played. Kyrie Irving has not played an 82-game season in his entire NBA career. He's had four seasons with less than 40 games. That's why nobody's paying you. It has nothing to do with anything other than your ability to get on the court and stay on the court. The vaccine situation was your own making. But you're so good, guess what? They still would have given you the money. But you have these other things that worry people about you, and that's why you didn't get paid. So the Nets having their media day between them and Ben Simmons just hauling off on the Sixers, it's been gorgeous.
Yeah, Ben Simmons just needs to just get on the floor. You know, the last thing Ben Simmons needs to do, there's no reason to open these cans. There's no reason. Look, we all saw what your part was and the Sixers part was and the whole just soap opera through it. We saw the last games you played leading up to that, which was an indictment on your ability to be in the big game and in the big moment. And then that's the last impression, the last taste we've had. And it's almost like, don't even take, you know what? I'm a Net now. I can't wait to be on the court with Kevin Durant and Kyrie and start getting after teams. And, you know, we're going to just say that, like, and it just goes to show you that the immaturity that it put him in that situation to begin with and let that situation just be chronic is why. And it's not going to serve him well. It's not going to serve the Nets well. I have a hard time thinking that this Nets team is going to come together as a team if these are where their personal mental, you know, situations are. If Ben Simmons is still, you know, letting – you know, the Sixers and that whole thing live rent free in his head. And if Kyrie is letting the vaccination and the losing out and the, you know, all of the other things that he goes on in his head be the thing that is foremost. And that's what's on his mind. And if Kevin Durant is always feeling like, where's the next place I can go? I mean, these guys could put up very good individual stats because there's enough points, assists to go around in a 48-minute game. I mean, right. 125 points get spread around nicely, even in a loss. You know, you can put up some really good numbers. So I just don't, you know, I mean, Steve, they're going to have to – I mean, this is going to be a absolute hell or high water for them. There is no in between. There is no being a third or fourth seed.
Correct.
There is no in between. There isn't anything like this is a, you know, this is almost like their proof that they even, you know, belong to be a deserve to be assembled together.
So when you put them together, though, when you say that, when you put them together, they're still top three talent in the NBA.
Of course. Well, they're a problem as a three-headed monster on paper. Yes. 6'11 Simmons. I don't care how much I'll knock his offensive game. Six, you know, Kyrie out at the perimeter. Durant doing both. I mean, of course, on paper, that's a three-man team that should be, they should be, nobody should be the one seed in the East if that team is playing together as a team and they're on the floor. I don't care, you know, 70 games, even if every one of them played 70 and they may have missed a couple with each other. That's a number one seed, number two seed at worst. And that's a number two seed because somebody just had another good team in the East just had a remarkable high 60 win season that you just couldn't catch or whatever. You didn't even need to because being, but that's a one or two seed playing great basketball. That's what that team should be. And there should be no other, you shouldn't accept anything else. With that, we just talked. We just said the names of these guys,
right? So I,
with Patty Mills, with other guys, like they've got a roster.
This, the Brooklyn Nets roster is only second to the Golden State Warriors, whose roster looks grossly embarrassing with the talent that they have on it, young and old mixed. The only other
roster, talk about talent, age, depth. Absolutely. I totally agree with you. Maybe probably pound for pound, probably a little bit better if we're going to believe Ben Simmons is an all-time defensive player and can really contribute. Like, so if that's all of that being equal, probably age-wise, size, depth. I mean, coach is not even close, obviously.
Right.
Golden State's just
that
beating that, beating him with a sack of potatoes in that contest, right?
So, it'll be interesting to see because it this leads me to my next thing because at the start of the NFL season, much like NBA Media Day, everybody's got this good idea of my team's going to be XYZ. We're going to be good. No one starts the season with the exception of Greg Popovich who told people at Media Day, do not bet on us winning the NBA championship. It's not going to happen. Like, normally you only get a coach to say that. Greg Popovich knows what they're doing with their season. We're now at week three in the NFL season, and Jason, I got to ask you, of these three teams, who are you most surprised by their success? The Eagles, the Dolphins, or the Jags?
Well, I'm not going to say Eagles because I was already talking them up around this time of the year last year. I thought that the Eagles had a, you know, the Dolphins, I thought, you know, I even said, I think the AFC East might surprise you and be better than the AFC West. We said that before the season. I talked about that. So the Dolphins, not a huge surprise. I'd lie to you if I didn't say the Jaguars, right? But I'd also say they got a, you know, they had a number one overall pick that is the goods. They brought in a Super Bowl winning coach. I'll tell you who I think is really the biggest surprise, the Falcons. The Atlanta Falcons, to me, they're punchy. They've scored 27, 26, 27. They're 1-2, two losses by a total of 5 points. They score the same amount of points. They go out every week. You're talking about a whole new start over there, a whole new regime in coaching, a whole new post-Matt Ryan, who was there, you know, he's going to maybe have a small statue one day. I mean, that's how big this guy was in Atlanta for them in their success. So, I got to say, the way the Falcons have gone out and been prepared and look like they could have won every football game they've been in is probably the biggest eye-opener because if Tom Brady and that offense doesn't, you know, if they don't start amping it up here, that's anybody's division, really. And if the Falcons are going to play this kind of brand of football.
Of the three teams I gave, Eagles, Dolphins, Jags. I'm not impressed by the Dolphins because their wide receiver, their special skills, their wide receivers, their running backs, their tight ends are fast as lightning. So I can't reward you for going out and getting the fastest, best receiver that you could find and then being shocked when he actually helps your system. The Eagles were a playoff team last year, so I don't know how surprised anyone should be of their success. Maybe you may tell me Jalen Hurts is playing way crazier than you thought he would, Okay, you can sell me on that. But for me, it's Jacksonville. And I don't even think it's close.
Right.
Last year, Urban Meyer had this team being the utter definition of dysfunction. You get one coach has now literally made Trevor Lawrence look like the number one pick that everyone believed that he could be. And so for me, my biggest surprise of the season has easily been Jacksonville. And just like to you, Atlanta is like a bull, a revelation. To me, what is happening with them is an absolute revelation. Because if the Jaguars can be good, that will take the AFC South and turn it into a respectable division, because I think the Colts will figure their way through things with Matt Ryan. I think the Titans will bust your nose if you don't hold your hands up, because that's just the way that they play football. And then you throw a competitive Jacksonville team in there with a franchise quarterback who now looks like he should have been the number one pick. I think Jacksonville is huge, 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 huge turnaround after 3 weeks, which then I don't know what your answer is going to be to this one, but who has been the biggest disappointment right now? I have the Chargers out here with a 1-2 record, a ton of injuries. The Raiders with an 0-3 record, and which makes the coach look like he's dysfunctional and can't plug in holes with his players. And the Bengals, who were in the Super Bowl last year, are now sitting at 1-2. Who would you say of those, unless you have another one in your bag, has been the biggest disappointment?
I think the Cardinals have been. And even though they stole that game away from the Raiders, it was basically against the other biggest disappointment, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And they got smoked by the Chiefs. And they went in there and they got just smothered by the Rams, who weren't even really playing that well. This is a Rams team that's still, I think, trying to figure it out a little bit after that, you know, championship hangover, you know, the rings ceremony week one, you know, and all of a sudden it looks like, you know, it's funny, the AFC West and the NFC West were supposed to be these great big divisions when we started out the season. And right now they're kind of like, you know, limping around a little bit with the Rams kind of feeling really good in their situation all of a sudden at week three. Where they are, and the Chiefs still feeling good, even though, you know, they lost last week to the Colts. So everybody's looking up at them pretty much. Denver's 2-1 too, but yeah, I would say the Cardinals, man, you know, when you look at, like, they had to get a couple of quick touchdowns. I mean, they had 8 points at the 3 minute mark of the game, I think, against the Raiders. They scored 12 points against the Rams. They scored 21 points against the Chiefs. It's bad.
For me, I think the disappointment is the Bengals. I think the idea that Joe Burrow, I mean, you cannot prevent injuries happen in a game of football when you have five guys go out in either one game or within the day before and the game of be called off. That's not great, but that's football. Josh McDaniels not being able to connect to people, you shouldn't be shocked by that, because clearly – that guy was not good. He's not a good people person, period. So let's not, you don't dwell on that too much. People thought Joe Burrow was the next Tom Brady. He still may be. People thought the Cincinnati Bengals were going to come into this season ringing bells. They haven't. People thought Joe Burrow would be looking like the early MVP. He hasn't. Where's Ja'Marr Chase? Hasn't seen him. It's been three games. I'm not flipping out. I'm not looking at it like, oh, see, I'm ready to call him a bust again, because that's not what I'm here for. What I am telling you is, at the end of the day, I expected way more from the Bengals, because I felt like they were ascending. I felt like they were going up. And now it really feels like the old Cincinnati Bengals that can't get out of their own way. So for me, it's Cincinnati.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't worry about Cincinnati. I think if you look at their two losses, they are, you know, they lose to the Steelers on, they have a chance at the game-winning field goal in regulation. They miss it. The Steelers beat them in overtime on it. They come out, they obviously play flat and bad, and Cooper Rush gets the win. And then they correct themselves. They go on the road, and they have a good performance. Burrow, three touchdowns, no picks, none of that kind of stuff. They move the offense, you know, the way they wanted to against the Jets. And last year, they didn't start out great. And what I always loved about Burrow was he's got a gift of the short memory. As good of a quarterback he is, he's got a good gift of the short memory. Bad series, two bad series, three bad series in a row. He'll go back to the pad and he'll just calmly come back out. And you know, a couple of games early, they lost by 3-6 points, some weird close losses, and they weren't out. They didn't come out of the gate last year. They were a team that really just got better as the season went on.
Right.
So I wouldn't worry about the Bengals too much just yet, because I think they'll find their groove. And I think it's going to be, you know, another AFC North battle between teams that just, it's going to be attrition. I think that maybe the Steelers are the odd man out. But I think those three teams, Cincinnati, Baltimore, and Cleveland, will much have a type of, you know, battle towards the end like they did last year in a sense. And it's going to be, who's the team playing better in November and December in that division, and who's who, you know, which one is, and that's who's going to win the division. And that's going to be yet to say. That's going to be a fun division to see as November, December comes.
The thing about that division is, by the time Deshaun Watson returns,
it'll be,
will
that
Lamar
time.
Jackson already be the MVP?
Right.
Will the Cleveland Browns have won enough games to have Deshaun Watson's return impact them for a Super Bowl run, which I think it will, believe it or not. And
looking good now.
at that point in the season, where will the Bengals be with Joe Burrow? And have they found their stride like they did at that time of the year when Deshaun Watson set to return for the Cincinnati Bengals? So there, that division is as interesting as the AFC West was to start the season. I think the AFC North will be equally interesting when Deshaun Watson gets back. But
oh, yeah.
Last thing on the show today, we'll revisit this again. Who you got? The game's game started a couple minutes ago. Who you got? Dodgers or Padres tonight?
I got the Padres coming out and playing smart baseball. I think they're going to be ready. I think they're going to have playoff mindset. I think Melvin's going to manage with a playoff mindset. Snell gives them six strong. Whether it's a run or two he gives up, the Padres win it tonight, 5-2.
Let's go, Padres. Padres win tonight, 5-4. We'll see y'all tomorrow to see if I'm lying or not. Brownie and Lawhead, ESPN, Mighty 1090. Peace.
Peace.